Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Tuesday. It's April 16th, 34 degrees here in Old Town Park City. Definitely have some clouds here in Old Town. On the phone with us with an update, we've got meteorologist Thomas Giboy. Good morning.
Morning, Leslie. Happy Tuesday to you. And we do have those clouds that we have from yesterday. They're in the process of clearing away. And as we move into the afternoon, we'll mainly see just some mix of sun and clouds, so mostly sunny to partly cloudy. And it will be warmer compared to what we saw yesterday. So we're settling into a little bit of calmer stretch of weather for today as we see a daytime high come in right around 50 degrees, which is very close to where we should be for this time of year in Park City. Pretty nice day if you do want to go ahead and spend some time outside. There will be a weak disturbance that moves through the northern half of the state between late tonight and through tomorrow. And that might be enough for a slight chance for a few showers, but overall the chance of wet weather stays low, maybe 30% chance at most in the Wasatch back as we see an overnight low tonight drop to 35 degrees. But even with that system brushing by the northern half of the state tomorrow, if we don't find wet weather, we'll continue to see mainly partly cloudy skies with that daytime high right around 50 degrees. So maybe a little unsettled tomorrow, but probably won't be on the same magnitude compared to what we saw yesterday with our scattered showers we saw across the state. Then by Wednesday night, we're back to partly cloudy skies. The overnight low will drop to 28 degrees. So just a little bit of a brief cool down Wednesday night. But as quickly as we get into Thursday afternoon, we're right back to mostly sunny skies with that daytime high continuing to come in right around 50 degrees. So we'll see very seasonal temperatures over the next few days. But by the time we get into Friday and Saturday, our warm-up will begin to kind of ramp up as we close out the work week and move into this weekend. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, each day should bring either mostly sunny to partly cloudy skies, maybe just a touch more cloud coverage on Friday. That daytime high on Friday will climb to 55 degrees, will be at 56 on Saturday, and there's a chance that we could see a daytime high of 60 degrees on Sunday, just between Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, mainly during the afternoon hours. We can't completely rule out the chance for maybe a stray pop-up shower or even a thunderstorm, so that time frame would mainly be between 1 o'clock in the afternoon and 7, 8 o'clock in the evening, just as that's during the peak daytime heating. Overnight lows during that stretch mainly going to be in the mid to upper 30s, and as we move into next week, we should see mostly sunny skies on Monday. It's daytime high near 60 degrees. There are signs that we could see our temperatures ease down with maybe a little bit of wet weather towards the middle of next week, but that's just something that we'll watch for now. So over the next few days, mostly we'll see just relatively seasonal conditions, temperatures around 50 degrees in Park City for daytime highs, that slight chance for a few showers tomorrow. And then by the time we get into this upcoming weekend, daytime highs will be above average, again, with a slight chance for showers, but overall relatively quiet conditions over the next 7 days here, Leslie.
Okay, so as we kind of look for the snow melt, we're doing okay with that, given the temperatures.
As of right now, things are looking good. Doesn't look like we're going to see any rapid warm-ups, at least at this particular point. So even if we warm into the upper 50s to around 60 degrees, that should be able to help us kind of get that gradual snow melt as we move into these warmer months. So we'll just keep our fingers crossed that we don't see 50s one day and then the next day we're around 80 degrees.
Okay. Thanks, Thomas.
You're welcome.
Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with Wasatch County Manager Dustin Graybow. He'll have a preview of this week's county council meeting, including that action item of banning private helipads in the county. Mountain Mediation Center Executive Director Gretchen Lee will discuss the next free community-wide Let's Talk training. That's happening next Wednesday, April 24th, and Recycle Utah Director Carolyn Wara. We'll have details about the upcoming Hazardous Household Collection Day, among other things. Taking a look at some local news now. After last night, a 20-year-old from Summit County has made it to the top 14 in American Idol Season 22. KPCW's Connor Thomas has more on that.
Cabrian Richens, a North Summit High School grad from Hennifer, sang her first original song Sunday. It's titled Girl I Was. She called the song a love letter to her younger self. It was about finding self-love. What seemed at first like a slip-up, the judges found to be authentic and relatable. Here's Katy Perry.
I think it's kind of boring when somebody's perfect, you know? Because I think that we've all been there. We all relate to this. There's humanity in that performance. Yeah.
Fellow celebrity judges Lionel Richie and Luke Bryan agreed. Richie shared his own experience freezing up before a crowd in Madison Square Garden. American Idol announced Sunday night Richens was moving on to the next round of competition. After the public voted, the field was whittled down from 24 to the top 20. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
And once again, the public voted again, and the top 14 were revealed last night. KB did make it. The judges decided that she should advance to the top 14 after her rendition of the Cranberries' Zombie. Well, the Wasatch County Council meets on Wednesday starting at 4 o'clock. On the phone with a meeting preview, I have Wasatch County Manager Dustin Graybaugh. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So a pretty lightweight agenda. Really, the only thing that caught my eye was that public hearing at 6 o'clock. Council being asked to delete code language that currently allows helipads. So why is this being proposed?
The interesting thing is actually we have in our chart of conditional uses, you know, we talk about helipads, but it's actually not an eligible use in any of our zones. So what this does is actually clean up and clarify that we don't actually intend to allow helipads in the majority of the places of Wasatch County, including the P-160 zone.
Okay, so the fact that Trevor Milton had his application for a private helipad in before this, does that impact his application at all?
No, he was applying to change it so that a helipad would be a permissible use in that P-160 zone, and the council denied that change. That was several months ago. And so this change just makes it more clear that those types of uses are not allowed in those areas.
Okay, but there sounds like there are some exceptions.
Yes, and I'm not familiar enough with the exact details of it. I think, you know, there are very limited circumstances where they could be permitted, but they require fairly significant mitigation efforts, distances from other residences and other things like that. But I'm not as familiar as our planning staff is with what the details of those restrictions are.
Okay, and my understanding then it would go under through a conditional use process then to obtain that exception?
Yes.
All right. And of course, medical helicopters would be exempt, or search and rescue is what I'm thinking. But
Yeah. Those other types of emergency uses.
Right. All right. You have two new staff members, one taking over as the MIDA coordinator, the other a management analyst. So the MIDA coordinator is a role that Mike Davis was serving in already.
Yeah, actually, those are actually the same position. So we recruited a management analyst to fill the MIDA coordinator duties. So Mike Davis was filling those roles, and this new position will have those similar duties combined with myself going forward.
Okay, so we're talking about just one, not a new position, one that had already been funded previously.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a different position. It's a change. The individual we've hired, we're also assigning them to kind of some other special projects. Project management, and we really view the MIDA project area as one of those projects. I expect the MIDA project will take up something like 25 to 50% of that employee's time, just with the way that we have it broken down now between myself and this individual. We do have other new employees that have joined the manager's office, and we've also recreated our engineering department. So we've had a fair bit of change just in my little part of the county.
Okay. And then in terms of room at the county offices, you're bursting the seams at this point?
Yeah, it's getting a little tight. We have some employees in closets, and we split my assistant county manager's office into two cubicles so that we could fit this change. We just hired a communication director who started yesterday, and so we're basically at capacity. Part of that is what's driving the discussion around our new administration building, which we actually had an RFP that closed yesterday for architectural services for that facility.
All right. So till now, you didn't have any kind of communications person?
No, it's just me. So that's why you get to hear from me. So,
okay. Who's this person?
Her name is Joan Gould. We're actually really excited to get her on board. We're hoping as a communication director that the county can be more proactive about our communication with the public. And, you know, and make everyone feel that we're more transparent and that they can come to us and for solutions and problems and that they can trust us. So she comes from a great of experience, worked for Harris County, Texas, is where Houston is located. And we're really excited that she's joined our team.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about the latest with the public infrastructure district. I know that this was discussed at last meeting. So anything new here?
The council asked us to make another revision to the policy that would push the timeline back. So what we had been considering, the council last year approved a public infrastructure district policy that outlined the criteria that a developer would have to meet in order to qualify for one. And what we've been considering over the last couple months is some modifications to that. And the council's asked for some additional modifications. Those modifications would make it more permissible to have a public infrastructure district featuring primarily residential developments in the Jordan L Basin area of the county.
All right, so is that the only area that's eligible for a PID?
No, so the policy as written prioritizes commercial developments and that those would be eligible in other places in the county. But the council felt that there, the demand and the impacts of having housing go into the Jordan L Basin were where we want the growth to take place in the unincorporated parts of Wasatch County. And so that's why I think they're considering now maybe making it a little bit more permissible in that area, but not extending that permission to other portions of the county.
All right. So what are the benefits for Wasatch County of being able to have these PIDs?
Well, some of the discussion that we've been having is around the new House Bill 13 from this last legislative session created infrastructure financing districts. And these are creations that the state has now authorized. And I don't know exactly the effective date. There, to my knowledge, there has not been any created in Wasatch County thus far. But a PID has the advantage of the county council being able to have input on the creation of these entities, whereas those infrastructure financing districts, as written by state code, we would never see it. The only time we see it is basically when they're kind of finalizing the process and we have to adjust our property tax system to accommodate it. By having input on the creation process, we're able to make sure that things happen in a way that makes us most comfortable that future residents that take over these places are going to have, I think, only fair impacts to their housing situation.
So if the county has its own kind of PID policy, and then the state has its own policy, I mean, tell me who do you listen to? I mean, which one do you follow?
Well, it really is just an option available to developers. They will have the option of the state whether or not we want them to have that option. By allowing the PID, we're allowing an additional option. So this wouldn't be something that would overlap. It would maybe be instead of these other options, because they're borrowing money against these properties and you wouldn't be able to borrow, you know, kind of double count those borrowing abilities. So it's a different tool that's available, one that we feel like if developers want to take advantage of it, one that the council is maybe a little bit more comfortable with than the alternative.
Okay, because that's where I'm kind of confused here. I mean, since this is a tax increment financing method, I mean, how many different types of increment financing can a developer use? And I'm thinking about MIDA here, which is itself a tax increment financial district. So can MIDA also use PIDs? I mean, it just sounds like taxation without representation.
MIDA has actually already created multiple PIDs. The difference is that a PID does not work on the same tax increment financing model that typical, you know, redevelopment agencies use. Normally, that's through the growth in value over time. What a public infrastructure district and these infrastructure financing districts do is they actually levy an additional property tax. And that additional property tax just goes back to repaying those bonds. What we're talking about at the county level is doing a one-time payment and this is what the most recent change the council's requested is that when there is a title transfer is when that one-time payment is paid off. The idea being that when the person is purchasing a property, they're most informed. There is additional disclosure requirements as part of our policy so that when they make that one-time payment, there is not an ongoing effect of that public infrastructure district. And I think that's why we feel like this represents the best interest of those future property owners, because you're right, there is concerns about maybe somebody buying into a property and not realizing what they're getting into. The advantage of other tax increment financing models, like with MIDA, is that the property owner themselves doesn't actually see any impact. They're just paying their property taxes like they would in any other place. What happens is on the back end, how those funds are allocated changes based on the agreements that exist.
Okay, so it does sound like you can use more than one PID at a time.
So the PIDs themselves, you can only use one of those because it's an extra assessment. Mm-hmm. What MIDA has is they have tax increment. So those are like I said, those kind of normal property taxes, those are subject to increment, but is only on the back end. The PID is an additional tax on top of that. And MIDA has their own policy and own way that they operate their PIDs. They use them for infrastructure in the area. There have been things like roads and other public amenities that they've bonded for. And those have been ongoing for a number of years, actually.
Okay. With the snow melting, when does the gate at Pine Canyon Road open?
I think we typically aim for around Memorial Day. Some of that is dependent on what the weather looks like and what our partners on other sides of it. So if UDOT decides they want to open it a little bit earlier, we might work towards that. There are some difficult challenges. I think this year we're pleasantly surprised to see that we have another solid snow year, but it could mean that there are difficulties opening some of those roads, and it all just kind of depends.
Okay, so that's not a county road. That's a state road, huh?
Actually, on the Salt Lake County side, if you're going up through there, there are portions of that road that are state road operated. And so when they get to the county line, it becomes a county, Wasatch County Road. And then it also obviously connects into Park City and other things. So we try and coordinate between all the entities involved to make sure that there's good access, because what we wouldn't want to do is open the road and have it dead end into a big snow pile, and then there's a bunch of people stuck on an otherwise very narrow road.
All right. Let's see. Coming up next month, it's on Tuesday the 14th, is the annual Wasatch Back Economic Summit. Will anybody from Wasatch County be attending this?
Yeah, actually, we have members of the county council attending for the kind of local government board, and then I will be attending myself with High Valley Transit, Park City, and UDOT to discuss transportation and transit on the Wasatch Back.
Okay, so that you're going to be the only one then participating in panels, or do you...
No, so I will be participating in the transit panels. We'll have council members participating in kind of the local governance.
Okay. All right, let's see. The IOC Olympic team visited last week. What was your takeaway?
I think we were very excited. We had a council member attend those meetings. I think they felt like the community still values Soldier Hollow a lot, and it's a big part of our amenities, both locally and regionally and nationally, internationally. So I think there's a lot of pride around some of that history. I think there's a little bit of concern making sure that we plan adequately to handle all of the things that come with the Olympics. So we're already talking now, 10 years early, to make sure that we're doing what we can to be prepared for when that time comes.
All right. So what improvements would Wasatch County like to see as part of any Olympic upgrades?
That's part of the ongoing conversation we're having with other partners in the Wasatch Back. I think a lot of those focus on transportation upgrades. That would be improved connections along Highway 40. And there are concerns around how we handled parking back in the 2002 Olympics. We actually graveled over the sewer farm and parked people there and then bused them over to Soldier Hollow. I know that the Olympic Committee is interested in trying to have, I think, relatively minimal impacts to the community centers. So what does that mean for our county as far as how do we get enough people into that venue in a way that's safe and productive and efficient? And so we don't have all the answers yet, but we are working on them.
All right. So besides kind of the parking there, any other improvements that need to be done to the venue itself?
I know that they have been making improvements. They recently just opened up some improved facilities down closer to where the sheepdog events are. There are additional kind of catering venues and more updated meeting spaces and things like that. I don't know that they have any kind of real specific. We have done a good job, I think, in Utah in general, of keeping up the quality of our Olympic venues. And so I don't feel like there's a really big gap. It's not the sense that I have from the organizing committee. It's more of what are all of the ancillary things that need to go into offering that support.
Yeah. And then what about the bypass? I mean, is it money you're talking about or just getting it done?
I think the bypass will be a priority for transportation within the valley. There is, obviously some short-term timing issues, but I think in the long run, it will be a cost. We're talking to probably multiple millions of dollars. Much of that will come from the state and federal funding, but there will be portions that will be local matches that we will have to discuss. And those will be ongoing discussions probably over the next 2 years as we conclude the EIS process. And then from there, it's how proactive can we be about identifying the funding? Because honestly, getting the bypass built by 2034, that's an ambitious timeline. I think it's achievable. It might be, particularly if the state prioritizes it as well. But I think it's something that's a hot area of discussion here in Wasatch County.
Okay, and again, we don't know anything until by the end of the year sometime, huh?
Yeah, we're expecting UDOT to come share an update with the county council in May. They hope to be able to share a little bit more information at a public meeting then. We don't have a specific date yet, but I've been working with them to try and encourage them to come out and discuss some of the things that we've already been doing around preservation adjacent to the bypass and things like that.
All right. And just real quick, in the meeting, the minutes from the last meeting, there was a note that a MIDA bill at the state legislature this year allowed MIDA to put in money to fund the Wasatch County School District. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, MIDA was, I think they partnered with the school district to work out some details of the Wasatch County School District. And the way that it's written, it applies to Wasatch County School District specifically. It doesn't call them out by name. But what it does is allows them that as the rates increase in the school district's property tax rates, those additional increases are not subject to the tax increment. So that, like the increase that the school district did last year, I believe that the school district will be able to retain that instead of, in the MIDA project area, those funds going back into the project. So I think it was a good faith effort by MIDA to try and make sure that they're mitigating any impacts that they have to the community and making sure the school district can capture a lot of the economic benefit of what's going to happen up in that area. I think this summer we're talking probably in excess of $1 billion of investment in properties up in that area. So making sure that the school district gets to keep that additional 75% of those increases could be a really big difference to property taxpayers in Wasatch County.
Oh, especially when they need to start paying back those lease revenue bonds.
Correct.
For the high school. Okay. Hey, anything else, Dustin, you wanted to mention?
No, not this morning.
All right. Thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Well, next week, Mountain Mediation Center presents a free community-wide Let's Talk training. It's happening Wednesday, April 24th. In the studio with details, I have the executive director of Mountain Mediation Center, Gretchen Lee. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having us on.
Yeah, so maybe just start by telling us, what's Let's Talk?
So Let's Talk is a communication skills-based training. It was initially developed by the Park City Leadership Class 29 as part of their class project last year. And when the class concluded in October, they asked us to take it over. And so now it's part of our cadre of communications trainings.
Okay. And that was, you decided to do it just because they asked you or because you thought it made sense for the Mediation Center to...
Yeah, no, it makes total sense for us. We, our mission statement is to prevent conflict, resolve disputes, and build an inclusive community. And as part of that, we had existing communications trainings. So this really complemented our existing selection of communications trainings.
Okay, so it's again next Wednesday, April 24th, when and where?
Yeah, it's at the Blair Education Center over at Park City Hospital, 6 to 8 p.m. That's one thing, one change that we made. It's a two-hour training. No dinner break. We just plug right on through, and it's a quick, fast-paced, interactional training that is fantastic, and everybody that's gone through it, we've just had nothing but positive, you know, reviews on it. It goes through four basic communication skills: active listening, self-awareness, finding common ground, and communicating to connect instead of convincing. So that's the sort of the outline of the evening.
Okay, so is it based on some kind of other training that's out there already? I mean, did the class then actually come up with the training?
Yeah, no, that was the class project, and it was based on, you know, they worked with us, they worked with folks from Westminster to identify, you know, 3 to 4 basic foundational communication skills, which they felt that the community could really benefit from you know, to have better, healthier, more productive conversations. Some of the material we already did in our existing training, so it's really just a nice collaboration and bringing together of some of these communication skills.
Okay, so I guess I was thinking there might be some national training out there that this was kind of based on.
Well, there, the Finding Common Ground, there are other entities that, you know, do Finding Common Ground. And of course, I can't think of the name right now. But and then the governor has a, you know, governor's initiative. So there are other things out there, but all consistently getting at, you know, a lot of these same skills.
Okay, so who's invited?
The community at large. So we are putting on, thanks to the Park City Rotary Club, they sponsored us to do two community-wide free trainings this year. We are delighted to be partnering with them and receiving the funding from them. It makes a lot of sense from us in terms of what one of their basic pillars is: peace, promoting peace, and providing community members with these communication skills is an awfully good start. So we have it inviting the community at large. So far we've had a healthy sign up. We're requesting people to sign up. We have people from the public sector, nonprofits, and local businesses all have signed up. So we're excited.
So I mentioned it's free for the participants. And then what, the grant then just helps you pay for the staff time involved?
Yes, there's a lot of organizing going on in terms of putting on these trainings. So yes.
Okay. So it's staff then that is doing the training.
Yes, and so what we are doing, Mountain Mediation Center, as part of this, we have staff, but then we also have a train the trainer module, and that's what part of this Let's Talk program has really been fantastic. We want this to be an ongoing community-based program, and we want it to bring in volunteers to get properly trained and to be able to run these trainings. So that's one of our internal goals, is to build our capacity so this can go, you know, spread throughout the community. And so we will be using a facilitator who is in training with a facilitator who has done this many times. So we're really trying to make this a community-based module.
Yeah, how much more training would be involved if somebody wanted to become a trainer?
Well, so in December, we did our first Train the Trainer evening, and then we're developing a framework where you take our training, and then you go as the second trainer, and then you get reviewed, and you come in as the primary trainer. And then we have ongoing training opportunities for our facilitators. As you know, we offer community conversations throughout the year, and there is a crossover between the communications trainers and our facilitators. And so one thing that our facilitators have asked for is ongoing training opportunities. And so we are providing them this year in terms of, for instance, next Thursday we're having Dr. Dave Desarius from the University of Utah, who's a professor in peace and conflict study, come and work with our facilitators in I've drawn a blank.
Conflict resolution, or yeah.
Trauma-informed, because in preparation for our Park City Film Event in early May, we'll be hosting a community conversation following a film, a sensitive topic filmed. We want to make sure that our facilitators, you know, are properly trained around being trauma-informed. We also have another training opportunity coming up, and this is initially intended for our facilitators, but it's such a fantastic opportunity. We want to ensure that the whole community is invited, and that is the May training with Ken Cloak.
So tell me a little bit about that.
That's
the guy that you mentioned already.
Yeah, exactly. So this is really a unique opportunity for our community. He is a world-renowned mediator and facilitator. He was the co-founder of Mediators Beyond Borders. He's written probably a dozen books around conflict prevention, resolution, mediation and facilitating dialogue. He will be here for another event in Salt Lake City, and he's agreed to come up to Park City to do a one-day training around facilitated dialogue.
Okay, so what's the film that you're going to be bringing in?
The film is totally unrelated to Ken Cloak. I feel like we have a lot of things going on right now. We have a lot on our bucket right now. But the film is called Broken Trust.
Okay, got it. Let's see. In terms of the participants, what are they going to get out of a two-hour training?
Well, the two-hour training is intended, like I said, are you referring to the Let's Talk? Mm-hmm. The Let's Talk is these basic, you know, communication skills to give people that opportunity to start being more intentional with their communications, whether it's communicating with a neighbor, communicating in a job situation, to begin to open up that awareness around the communication skills. Then, you know, if they are interested in pursuing and going deeper, we are providing that May 16th, you know, opportunity to go deeper with the facilitated dialogue with Ken Cloak.
Okay. And you also mentioned that there's this training and then a second training. When is, have you scheduled that one yet?
No, but we're thinking we wanted to do one now and then probably one in the fall.
Okay. Can we talk a little bit about the Mediation Center itself?
Sure.
Yeah, how busy are you?
We are very busy. As you know, we do a lot of landlord-tenant work. We have two of our four pillars are mediation, and then we have a landlord-tenant eviction diversion program. And we have a steady stream of calls around landlord-tenant work.
So is that I guess the biggest issue that the mediations entail, landlord-tenant?
Right now, I would say yes. Mm-hmm. During COVID, definitely. And then we continue to get calls, yes.
Yeah, so I guess when should mediation not be used?
In terms of landlord-tenant?
Well, just in any case.
You know, sometimes there are, the case, whatever the case may be, it's so far down the road that you really need an attorney. Once it's entered into, you know, the legal, you know, filings and the legal process, there's still a need for mediation, for instance, in domestic mediation. If there's a contested divorce in the state of Utah, you are required to mediate before a judge will hear the case, just like we do our small claims over at the Silver Summit Courthouse. If you are going to appeal a case at the justice court level, you have to mediate. So although we see a lot of cases that are upstream before filing, downstream, once things are filed, there is still like a need and a place for mediation.
Yeah, so as a nonprofit, does the Mediation Center provide a lower cost mediation service than just hiring a former judge or something?
We do. You know, our target audience in terms of mediation is, you know, the lower income underserved population. So we operate on a sliding scale. And we can provide services in Spanish as well. So we want to serve the entire community with these services.
Okay, because I'm thinking about just a recent case here where the judge ordered the parties to go to mediation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they got 60 mm-hmm. days to kind of figure it out. Otherwise, it comes back to him and he'd make a ruling.
Yeah. So, and that happens sometimes. And we, as our Mountain Mediation Center, we provide state court rostered mediators. That's another thing, just, you know, under state law in the state of Utah, you do not have to be on the state court roster to hold yourself out as a mediator, but that is our bar in terms of a nonprofit. We want to make sure that all of our mediators are on that state court roster. And then there's a separate state court roster for domestic mediators because there's so much law involved in mediating a domestic case.
Yeah, so are mediators then, are they required to be an attorney or
attorney? No, there's absolutely no requirement to be an attorney. But again, I just, you know, emphasize for us, our bottom bar is that you are on that state court roster. And if you're going to do domestic cases for Mountain Mediation, you need to be on the domestic roster as well.
Okay. Again, the Let's Talk training is happening next Wednesday, April 24th, 6 to 8 p.m. at the Blair Education Center at Park City Hospital. People just go to the website to sign up.
Yes, yes, mountainmediationcenter.org.
Okay. Anything else, Gretchen?
I don't think so, not today. Thanks for having us on.
All right, thank you. Gretchen Lee is the executive director, again, of the Mountain Mediation Center. Well, it's that time of year again. Registration now open for the Park City Fire District's wood chipping program. KPCW's Parker Malatesta has details.
The Fire District's wood chipping service is scheduled to begin May 6th in the Jeremy Ranch neighborhood. The service runs through September 26th, with the chipping crews cycling through 14 neighborhoods across the fire district. For those interested, Park City Fire Marshal Mike Owens said the first step is to register online.
So if the pile's not registered, we're not going to chip it. Aside from that, there are a few rules on our website that you have to follow. Mostly, we can't do gigantic piles. We limit it to 8 feet wide by 8 feet long by 6 feet tall, which is still that's a lot of wood. If you have more wood than that, then it's okay. Register a second pile, and when we do another lap around the district, we'll catch you the second time. Each pile has to be registered separately, though.
Owen said piles need to be clean and free of dirt, bulbs, or anything that would clog up the chipping machine.
We can take everything from trees to branches. We do limit it at 6-inch logs. We don't want anything bigger than that.
People can register for the chipping program and learn more at pcfd.org. For those that want to use wood chips for landscaping or other means, the fire district keeps a pile in front of Station 33 on West Bittner Road. Owen said people can take as many wood chips as they desire for free. Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.
In the studio now with an update from Recycle Utah, I have Executive Director Carolyn Moore along with, on the phone with me, the Executive Director of the Bicycle Collective, Donna McAleer. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Okay, let's see. First off, Carolyn, let's just talk about, you made it back from Antarctica. You were there to run a marathon. How'd you do?
Yes, well, thank you. Leslie and I did a quick chat before I headed out. My husband, Chris, and I completed a marathon. It took us about 6 hours. And we planned to run on mud. It's kind of, Antarctica's kind of coming out of summer, going into winter. And they had us all prepped to run on mud. And then the day of the race, we get 3 inches of fresh snow. So we ran on fresh snow. It was very, very much like running in Round Valley, like up, down to the valley, up out of the valley, back into the valley. We ran between three different research stations. We ran between Russia's research station, China's, and then Uruguay. We had to do that route three different times. We got a little bit more exciting course than we thought, and we had a really good run. But I really think, you know, the race was just a small part of a really amazing trip. We saw tons of penguins and whales and just in awe of the pristine environment in Antarctica. You know, there's no like shops or stores or places you go into. You know, just go on the continent, it's just you and the animals, or you and the whales, or you and nothing. It's really neat how, you know, through the Antarctic Treaty, everybody there works together to protect that continent and keep it as special a place as it is. And I felt lucky I got to go spend time there.
Yeah, I was going to ask, I mean, any epiphanies from you as you kind of, you know, look at how we trash in the rest of the world when you go into such a pristine area?
Right. They did have some briefings before we got off our cruise ship and touched base on the continent about how to behave. You know, you had to make sure you didn't have any seeds in your pockets or on your Velcro, because there's only two plants that grow on Antarctica, and they don't want to change that. And if I brought, you know, some chia seeds in my granola bar and those got on the new continent, we'd change things there. And so they give you a lot of really serious briefings about why Antarctica is special and how to keep it that way. You know, everything from washing your boots every time you went from one penguin colony to the next. It's very regulated there and how they protect that place and keep it safe and a good place for tourists to go.
Yeah. So did you need special shoe coverings then?
You get off the cruise ship on kind of Zodiac boats, kind of like a raft. And then to get in and on and off that Zodiac boat, you have waterproof boots that they issue you, that you wear the whole time you're there, and you're washing those boots and using those boots. So kind of just, they give you those, one, to control what goes on the continent, and then two, to just let you get them wet in the water.
So. Okay, so any challenges for you?
No, not really. The race was a little harder than we thought, but both Chris and I felt lucky that we actually live in a winter climate and live in a place with hills. I mean, there's people from like New York City coming out to run the marathon, and they don't have any experience with trail running. You know, they maybe haven't run on packed snow. So we felt very lucky that we live here in Park City and we're able to train pretty well.
Yeah. What was the winning time for your group?
The winning woman was 4:25. Okay. And I finished 6 hours, which is about expected.
Yeah.
So not a real fast race. Nothing like Boston yesterday, but it was not all about the race there. It was more about seeing and experiencing the continent.
That sounds like a great trip. All right, well, let's move on. Coming up, we've got April 27th, the Summit County Hazardous Household Waste Collection. Tell us about this.
Right, that's coming up from 9 to 1 that day. It'll be held over at Canyon's Cabaret parking lot. And again, this is for Summit County residents. I know there's some listeners in Wasatch County. If you live there, they take this type of waste through the transfer station. I would give the Wasatch County Transfer Station a call. Things we take are any kind of paint, varnish, chemicals, pharmaceuticals, any pills, you know, and then kind of in these categories, I encourage you to, like, you know, look in your cabinet and be broad. Like, I'm not really sure if they want vitamins. Bring the vitamins. It's fine. Or, hey, I'm not really sure about this paint. Bring it anyway. We will figure it out. Part of the appeal of this event, it's kind of a catch-all. You know, we'd rather have the really nasty stuff like a varnish come next to, you know, the kids' craft paints. The kids' craft paints aren't harmful. They're probably fine. They're mostly water-based. But that varnish sitting next to them in your cabinet, that's really what we want. You know, oil-based, the more chemicals, the more oil, the harder stuff it is to get out of our water. And that's why we're collecting these kinds of things.
Okay, what about old TVs and other electronic waste?
Yep. We take all kinds of electronics. If you're bringing a really big TV that takes more than one person to lift it, I encourage you to kind of get out and help. The volunteers for this event are from Sunrise Rotary, and I don't want anybody to break their back lifting your TV, so help them out with something like that. But everything from a VCR to a printer to, you know, TV, stereo set, so that kind of stuff.
All right. And what are the no-nos? What can't you bring?
We do not take refrigerators, tires, or household recycling. Those are some things we don't take. And then I wanted to bring in the Bicycle Collective today because, you know, the sad thing about this event, some of the stuff is so nasty. There's no other way to dispose of it than through incineration. You know, the EPA requires what we take at this event and how it gets disposed of. And there's no way around that. You know, I can't say like, oh, you know, I really, the PFAS, you know, forever chemical, let's do something else with it instead. You know, it's called forever chemical because it's here forever. And the only way to get rid of it is through incineration. So, you know, something like the Bicycle Collective, they're repurposing and reusing, recycling things. You know, I think the bicycles, the batteries, some of the electronics, the mattresses, those are all kind of in the recycle reuse category. They can be taken apart and reused. You know, the nasty stuff like the chemicals, the paints, the varnishes, the pharmaceuticals, they're in the incineration. We just don't want them in our environment anymore kind of thing. So I'll give Donna a chance to talk about what they do at the Bicycle Collective.
Okay, Donna, good morning. So you're going to have staff there then on the 27th to take old bikes?
Yes, Leslie, we will. Carolyn, thank you again for inviting us. Yeah, Bicycle Collective will have myself, Thomas Cook, who's our digital strategist, and a couple of our volunteers who volunteer at the Bicycle Collective but live up here in Summit County. And as you know, a bicycle is not a hazardous object, and it's something that could last decades. It's taken care of. We've, over the last couple years, about 40 to 50 bikes are collected at this time. These bikes stay in the community. We bring them to our shops around the state, and we refurbish and repair them, and we provide them to people in need who don't have another form of transportation or independent mobility. We focus on children, newly resettled refugees, people experiencing homelessness or housing insecurity, people recovering from substance abuse. And the bikes that are not repairable, we strip those parts for their usable parts, and then we recycle the rest. Last year, throughout the state, Bicycle Collective recycled more than 82 tons of aluminum, steel, and rubber.
Wow. How many bikes do you actually fix up every year?
So last year, we gave away 1,349 bikes to people in need the state. And we work with more than 60 community partners to identify those individuals in need of transportation. Transportation, as you know, is a formidable barrier to economic mobility. Just about everything associated with upward mobility and economic progress, be it job interviews, food, goods at a reasonable price, healthcare, and schooling, relies on the ability to get around in an efficient way and at an affordable price. Practical and affordable, a bike contributes to that economic well-being. emotional stability and physical health. And the bottom line is, it's just really a simple, eco-friendly transportation option.
Okay, so you're not looking for full bikes. You're looking for any kind of bike parts?
We'll take any kind of bikes, bike parts, bike components, tires, rims. Again, not everything is in the stuff that people donate. Some of it's in absolutely great shape. Maybe they've decided they're upgrading their bike, or they're no longer cycling, or they want to try a new discipline. Maybe their kids grew out of a bike and they decided they didn't want to sell it. People donate it to us and we will upcycle it and repurpose it. So some of the bikes that we get, we repair and we make available in our shop. So along the side, the services we offer to people in need, we operate as an affordable alternative to increasingly expensive bicycle retailers. And we offer a full range of refurbished bikes at an unbeatable price. And that allows us to grow our base of support while financing many of our essential functions. So the bikes that people donate to us at Hazardous Waste Day in Summit County will either be repaired, refurbished, or recycled.
All right. So you, is this your first year then joining the Hazardous Household Waste Collection, or?
No, about 5 years ago, Sunrise Rotary and Steve Canton, who's actually a neighbor of mine and was on the executive committee, reached out to Recycle Utah and Carolyn and myself and said, hey, what about joining this? There's a lot of people who have bikes they're not using anymore. Would you all be interested? And we jumped at the opportunity, and Carolyn and Sunrise Rotary have been amazing in welcoming us to this event.
Okay. So in terms of when you have a bike rebuilt, somebody would have to buy that, or you do give them away?
Well, Leslie, we do both. We give bikes away to people throughout the state. Again, we focus on various groups of people who don't have any independent mobility, so they don't have a car. And again, these are like newly arrived refugees, people experiencing housing insecurity, people that have fled their home for domestic violence. And we give those people a bike free of charge that becomes their primary means of transportation. But we also sell refurbished bikes in our shop to help finance our operations. So we have a blended revenue model where we earn about 70% of our revenue through our retail and online sales, and then we raise about 30% through our charitable outreach and philanthropic giving.
Okay. Where are you located? People need a new bike.
So if they need a new bike, please visit us at our brand new Salt Lake City hub and headquarters on 9th South and 325 West in the Granary District. We just opened this location. It's been a 10-year journey to actually have a building in a prime location. We are right on the 9 line in the Granary District. We got 3 breweries within 2 blocks. It's a really great space. And for those, you know, not wanting to visit Salt Lake, we've got a shop in Ogden. We have one in Provo, and we also have one in St. George. So our inventory is constantly changing. You can find some unbelievable unicorns there if you come on in. Or we also have bench space that you can rent from us for $10 an hour. You can use our bench space, our tools, our lubricants, and get assistance from our professional mechanics to work on your own bike.
Awesome. Okay. Well, Don, I appreciate your time this morning. Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's move on. Anything else you wanted to mention about Collection Day?
Nope. Okay. April 27th, 9 to 1, Summit County residents only, no businesses. I can tell if you're a business. I've been doing this a long time.
Okay. Let's move on to, we've got an upcoming Earth Day celebration.
Yes. Next Monday, a week from yesterday, is Earth Day. I kind of feel like ends are reaping a little bit. Do something nice for the earth around now, even on that day, whether it's pick up trash with your neighbors, change a new habit, try something new. We are going to celebrate at Twisted Fern from 5 to 8 p.m. on April 22nd, and this is a fundraiser for education programs. And typically for us, we see about 5,000 elementary students every year, And I think this is going to be where we're going to bump it up a little bit. We've been a little more active in Eastern Summit County. We were just at South Summit Elementary yesterday, hitting about 150 students. So it's great to get over there and give them some of our stuff. So tickets for Earth Day are still available. They're $50 each. They include dinner and two drinks. A special thank you for Twisted Fern for hosting. Adam Ross is now on our board, and he was kind enough to open up his space. So if you'd like to join us, visit our website. We still have tickets available.
Okay, and save the date. We've got Dumpster Days returning.
Right, Dumpster Days coming up May 30th, 31, and June 1st. That's a Thursday through Saturday. And then while you're looking for something to do with Earth Day being in town, there's a bunch of trash cleanup events coming up. Swanner's hosting one this Saturday. There's a few next week, and then following as we get more into May. So if you're looking for some organized event, I encourage you to join us. Those, again, are listed on our website.
Okay. Carolyn, thanks.
Thank you.